Boker Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Kiddushin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Yud Beis. And we are holding almost at the end of an understanding of the basis of Beit Shammai Sfora, that you need a dinner instead of a pruta. So we started with one idea, which was that the basis of it was the question of what the normal das is of the Isha, and that she's makpedet al atzma, which was a rather difficult thing to accept because it seems to be lishiyurim, if she would be actually extend her hand out and take it, so then it would be okay, even I'll leave it at Beit Shammai. Then we had the question of whether it's actually a din in the Torah that defines the nature of money. And this was the question about kol kesef that we find in the Torah is kesef tzuri, and there is no pruta in kesef tzuri. And so memela, we look to the silver value of a dinar. Then we had the question of perhaps we could learn it out from the din of yiud, from an oma ivriya, where over there it can't possibly be a pruta, because you need, just like by yiud, you have to have the ability to be miyayid, so too, by being paid at the Oma Ivriya, and we find that the Torah uses the hefda, meaning that the Odin has to help the Pidyon, so by doing so, he would need to be able to deduct value from the sale, according to how much he's worked, prorated. But if you start off with the kinyan of a pruta, then there would be nothing that you could possibly deduct and no way to prorate. So memela, it cannot be a pruta. And once it wasn't a pruta, we put it up to the next level of choshava value, which was dinner. Those were the three shitas that we had so far. And now the final shita, which is one line above the wide lines on your base, Rava Amar Hainu Taimed Beit Shammai, it is a gezeira derabona, because we don't want women to be treated as hefker. Shlo yu benot Yisrael kehefker. And the Rabbanan were mafkia kiddushin to say, we do not accept the kiddushin kedas meshem Yisrael. We do not accept kiddushin that reduces the value of a woman to something that you buy in a bubblegum machine. And that's Hainu Taimed Beit Shammai shelo yu benot Yisrael kehefker. Okay, continuing on now. So, Beit Hillel says, Bepruta, Beshava Pruta. So now, the question is, this idea of the Beshava Pruta, Rav Yosef thought that the meaning of Pruta, according to Beit Hillel, is whatever the Pruta is worth. Pruta Koltahu. So basically, whatever the coin is at that point, that is called the pruta, that is to say, the smallest coin that people use of any value, that's what it means to talk about a pruta. But there's certainly no defined value in a pruta. Omerlei Abaye, but how can you say that? The Mishnah goes out of its way to say that there is a defined value. The Mishnah goes out of its way to say, V'alor katani, kamo pruta echad mishmona b'yisara yitalki. So how can you possibly say that it doesn't depend on some given value of metal? It says in the Mishnah what the value of metal is that it is. So obviously, Abaye is saying that the pruta that is defined at the time that we're saying that Moshe Rabbeinu was talking about Kedushin is based on the certain amount of silver, even though there was not an actual coin. And that amount of silver is the amount which was then worth one shminis. And that has, as the Rambam explains, that was a chatzi seora worth of the metal of silver. And then you take the metal of silver in your time, you estimate the value of it in your contemporary coinage, and that becomes the pruta at its time. Otherwise, what's the meaning of the Mishnah in giving this value? V'chi tema, maybe you'll say that the Mishnah was only giving the value of a pruta at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, why in the world it would be necessary to know such a thing? Not to discuss what would be the meaning of saying, ma dehave have. It might define cases where there is no value that's called a particular pruta, and there we do go according to, there's a lot of tirutzim in the Rishonim, what difference would it make to know what kind of havamina this is? Why would a Mishnah tell us something that isn't nogea? Okay, there has to be some place that's nogea. And maybe you'll say, so that's only bedora shomesh, but ein achinami hocha, where we're talking about in the Mishnah, that would mean kedachash v'leilinche. That's what Rabbi Yosef seems to think, that whatever people call a coin, the smallest possible coin, we know that that's not true. Because v'akiyata Rav Dimi, so Rav Dimi came to Bavel, he said, that in Eretz Yisrael, she'er Rabbi Simoi bedoro kama upruta, Rabbi Simoi, who wanted to find out whether a particular kedushin was chal at his time, and he wanted to know if the coin was valued sufficiently that it should be a chalos kedushin, and he estimated that it would be worth echad mishmona b'yisara yitalki, so even that pruta needed to be worth in his door an echad mishmona, and because of that, he was mevato the kedushin, and he said, no, you don't have to be chayish for this kedushin. So obviously, even though there was a coin that had been given to her, it wasn't good enough. The same thing happened. Ravin said that he also came from Eretz Yisrael, and he said that Rabbi Distoyan, Rabbi Yanai, and Rabbi Shaya, they had the shayla over there about a kedushin, whether it was good, and it turned out it wasn't good because the pruta needed to be worth echad mishisha b'yisari italki. Whatever the machlokas is about whether it's a sixth or an eighth, but we see clearly that the smallest coin is not necessarily useful for a kedushin. It has to be valued in terms of the silver content. So obviously there's a certain amount, and the Mishnah meant that amount, not like what Rabbi Yosef says. Omar le Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef is to buy what? That's what you think? That it has a particular amount of silver that we need to estimate? So then how do you explain the Braita? I know the Braita. The Braita says, Tzei v'chashov, kama prutot b'shnei saloyim, yoter me'alpayim. Can you imagine how much trouble you can get into by not being careful for 1 minute? So what happens? Your nene one shavar pruta from Hegdash. You're mechuyev to bring an asha mi'ilais. An asha mi'ilais has a minimum value of shnei saloyim that we learn out from the pasuk. So if that's the case, you're ending up repaying, meaning it's coming out of your pocket for the chet that you did of one shavar pruta of hanah, more than 2,000 prutas. A disaster. Now, says Rabbi Yosef, if you're telling me that a pruta is only and defined forever as echad mishminis b'yisra italki, how would you get, what do you mean? There's not even 2,000. There can't be more than 2,000. It's ridiculous. Ashta alpayim lo havyan. We're going to see that we don't get anywhere near that. And you're telling me it's more than 2,000? So obviously the Braita was referring to prutas at that time, which were little coins, which indeed were worth more than 2,000. Priscilla, so how do you explain it, Abaya? I'm asking you. You tell me. Okay, so basically, let's remember how this worked out. Because if there are prutas, if we go according to the Isra Yitalki, well, there's only 96 isers, we're going to see in a moment, there's only 96 iser per sela. And if there's only 8 prutas in an iser, so then if you've got Shnei Selayim, what do you have? You have basically 8 prutas times 96 Isserim times 2. So what does that equal? That equals 1,536. So what do you mean there's more than 2,000? That's what Rabbi Yosef is saying. There's nowhere near 2,000. So how can there possibly be more than 2,000? So you see that I'm right? Well, remember, according to some, this was Eliyahu Hanavi. You know, your girsa, Rabbi Yosef, in that brisa is wrong. Anatanin Allah, korov la'alpayim. I know very well what the girsa is in that brisa. I was the one who said over that brisa, and I actually say it over as less than 2,000. It's nearly 2,000. So what the brisa was saying is, You're paying nearly 2,000 prutas for being Nana one shava pruta. That's, says the Gemara, how does that answer it? It still doesn't help. How are you calling it close to 2,000 when besach hakol it's 1,536? So how would we call that close to 2,000? It doesn't help that much. No, that doesn't bother me. Look, obviously we're speaking in hyperbole, right? We're saying, look at this, you took one shava pruta and close to 2,000 prutas. So, I mean, how much exaggerated could I have? It's more than 1,500, right? So it's 36 over the halfway mark of the second thousand. Okay, so since it's already well into the next half of the second thousand, I call it Korav L'Alpayim. That doesn't bother me so much. Because given an afkelim mipalga, since it's already more than half of the second thousand, so we wanted to exaggerate by calling it Korav L'Alpayim. That's acceptable. But to say that it's more than Alpayim, that indeed would have been absolutely impossible to fit in with the way that Abaye was learning the Mishnah. So basically, we're left with Abaye's understanding in the Mishnah. Gufa. Now, I just want to get back to, what was that machlokas about whether in their times you needed a sixth of an Isra'i Talki or an eighth of an Isra'i Talki? Like, what exactly were they arguing about? So Gufa, we said before that when Rav Dimi arrived over here from Eretz Yisrael, he said to us, Shir Rebbe Simoi B'doro, that there was a Kedushin that had come to Rebbe Simoi, and he ended up being Mevatel, the Kedushin, and he said, no, the Pruta wasn't big enough, it needed to be Echad Mishmeina B'Yisra Italki, and it wasn't. But then we had this other story, that when Ravin came, he said over Amaisa, that Reb Dustoi, Reb Yana, and Reb Oshai, in a different door, they added it up, had the same maisa. They were mevatel kedushin because the pruta wasn't big enough. How big did it need to be? It needed to be echad mishisha b'yisara yitalki. Like, what exactly were they arguing in? Omerle Abaye Rav Dimi. So, I mean, you are basically arguing somehow with Ravin about the value of a pruta. I mean, I don't know why you had to argue. This question happens to be a machlokas tanoim. Whoever heard of such a thing? Yeah, but you should have quoted the Shitas of the Tanoim. Unless I misunderstand. Nema at v'rovin v'plurtet ani tanoikom v'flegito. So you're arguing in the two Shitas in this Braisa, the Tanya. Pruta shamru chachamim echad mishmona b'yisara itaki. So if you're the Tanakama, says, Beferish, let me explain to you the coinage. The coinage system, and you'll see how it all works out. This Pruta is 1/8 of the Isser. Because here's how we work it out. The whole basic monetary system that we're utilizing for the Pruta. Nowadays, there's 6 mo'ot. Kesev, obviously, there are also mo'ot that we had in terms of Zav and the interrelationship of the Isarim to the dinner Zav. But there's 6 silver mo'ot per dinner. Now, each one of these ma'ot is worth 2 pundions. Each pundion is worth 2 isarim. Each iser is worth 2 musmasin. You think Harry Potter had problems. Pundion, all right. So, man, oh, man. I mean, you can just imagine Hagrid telling him over these kinds of shiurim, right? So, a pundion is 2 isers. An iser is 2 musmasin. A musmus is 2 kuntrinkin. A kuntrunk is 2 prutas. So that would mean that 1 pruta works out, if 1 iser is 2 musmus, and that's 4 kuntrinkin, which means 1 iser is 8 prutas. So nimtza pruta achas mishmona b'isara yitalki. That explains where we came up with this idea. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, I don't know about that monetary system. That's not what we use. I'll tell you, it's actually, there are 3 hadrasin in a mo'ot. And there's 2 hainitzin in a hadras. And there's 2 shemonim in a hanitz. And there's 2 prutas in every shami. But if you work that out, then it turns out that the pruta is only 1 out of 6 in the Isra'i Talki. So basically, the original values in terms of the dinner and the Isser There he didn't give any kind of different thing than the Tanakhama. So we can assume that he agrees that the Isser, the relationship of Din Rama and Isser, works out the same according to Rav Shimon Meir Maliel. So according to this, he would say, basically he's giving a two and then another two, and then each one of them is worth two, right? So you've got two times two times two, and then you've got the final level, which is the Shlosh Adras in Lama, times three. Okay, now, if that's true, since he would apparently not argue that there's six mos in every dinner, so then that means that he's saying that there's 24, which is the 24 that we add up with those smaller coins, in each one of these dinarim. And if he's saying that a dinner is 24 isurim, because he didn't argue on that, so then it means that 144 prutas is actually 24 isur. So that means six prutas per isur. So then you are arguing in exactly the same way. He, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, says six prutas per isur, and the Tanakhama said eight prutas for isur, and that's exactly what you, Dimi, and Ravin are arguing about. So why didn't you just quote them? Said Rav Dimi, nonsense. We wouldn't argue in a machlokas tanoim. Bein didi, bein Ravin, I'll leave it at Tanakhama. We were going according to the Das Rabin. We're not talking about Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. So how in the world did we come out with different shiurim? That's not a question. The different shiurim have to do with the different ways in which the value of the interrelationship of the Isser and the Pruta changes, not because the Pruta changes, but because the value of the Isser changes. That's the point. So what happened is, I was talking about a time where Ayaker Isure, the Isser was a high-valued coin. Ravin was talking about a period of time when the Isurim had been watered down and they were cheap. Fine. But, I mean, basically the value of the Pruta never changed. So I was talking about how the Akir Isure, I was talking about a time when Isurim were highly valuated, and then you could be Isurim the Arba Bezuzah. You would be able to only buy 24 Isurim per Zuz, which gave you 1/8 exactly of the Isser Yitalki. But Hadazol, at the time of Ravin, the Isurim were basically cheap, and you could buy 32 Isurim per Zuz, and because of that, at my time, the Pruta was actually worth 1/8 of a full-valued Isser. Ravin said, no, 1/8 is too little. In his time, the Isser was cheap because it had gone down to 32 per Zuz, and over there, it was 1/6. But in both cases, the Pruta is precisely the same amount. And that is that it equals essentially 1/192 of the actual dinner. That would be the difference. And that's why when we analyzed it, it came out differently, not in terms of the Pruta. Okay, so now that means in our Mishnah, we're assuming that we're on a silver standard. The silver standard was a half of a seora, which is known as a barleycorn, which is still used basically in certain measurements when you're talking about valuable jewelry and so on and so forth. So when we've got that amount in whatever coin you have, then it's a kosher pruta, but not when it's just any small coin. There is a question Rav Meisha was actually mitlabet about, the question of what happens if the smallest coin is indeed larger than the Pruta at that time. Would you still need the Pruta to be able to affect Kedushin? Because Bizmancha, that's the smallest, that's considered to be money. Omer Shmua. Now, I have an interesting point, and that is that since we're talking about fluctuation in values, and we're talking about the question of Shava Pruta. Now, Shava Pruta has got a whole different can of worms. Because if we're looking at the value of the Pruta in terms of a certain amount of silver, so then the same thing would be true, actually. And remember, this could mean that the coin that you are using may only be good because it's a Shava Pruta, not because it's really, because it's not real Pruta, it's just the equivalent of a pruta, which would have had to be in silver. That's a question of whether we're talking about value linked to silver or we're talking about actual silver. Well, one thing I could tell you for sure, let's say you give this as the basis of utilizing the word date for going out with women, because the Gemara says if you give a woman a date, and the question is, will the date be valued enough to be Mekadesh her? And I don't care if in your area, an entire core of dates is worth a dinner, which means that a particular date could be much less than a pruta. Nonetheless, she's Mekudesh. Why do I say that? Chayshinan Shama Shava Pruta B'Modai. This is another Gaviism, but not while he's driving. We're always afraid that the particular thing, even though here it's not valuable, but maybe it's valuable in a place like Modai, where they have to pay a lot of money. It's interesting why we utilize Modai. But I mean, the Gra points out that in the Pusik, Modai is a place where money isn't worth a thing. So Memela, I mean, that's talking about so that you may have tons of money and, you know, things are so expensive, like today, you want to buy a date. Good heavens, you know, you buy one ridiculous watermelon. It's going to cost you $1 for a watermelon or $5 for a watermelon or for an avocado. I mean, God help us, though. Try to buy it in Manhattan and see what it's going to cost you. So therefore, and that's how the girl understands it. So therefore, in Modai, since the Torah views, money is worth nothing there, so over there, it would be worth a Shava Pruta, because Chayshinan Shema Shava Pruta B'Modai. Barnea wants to tell us something, so I guess we'll have to risk it, because it might actually be interesting. Yes, Barnea.
It wasn't the Shava Pruta that date was the pits, but I wanted to say a natural date from Israel today is £1. In London, you buy £5.
Wow.
It's perfectly if the PO is there. So the money in London is worth something. But just
That's amazing.
Money worth nothing when we were in Istanbul many years ago, and we had to pay millions of liros for a hotel night, but it's like bags of money. But the main thing they wanted to say a moment ago was, I haven't seen, it could be there's a byline article in their journal about it, one of the journals, a good match of the Roman coinage one-to-one here. On the main one, it's pretty simple. I've sent the document from a number of different sources with a chart for it. And I just want to say that about 20 years ago, David Wilner and I went to see Kaplan from San Jose, David Kaplan San Jose, who was in the Chaim Berlin. And in the hallway, the Rashiva walked by. So they told the Rashiva, these guys have a Masis Shekel. So he says, I don't really have any time, but I guess to see a Masis Shekel, I have 1 minute. And we came to his office and we laid out Kedushin Daf Yudbeis on the table. At that time, and if Rebbe remembers David Leibov, the antiquities guy in Chabad, he would let us take everything we had the entire
time. I remember, okay, no quote.
Since the Rashiva passed away yesterday, I missed the timing of it.
Okay, Rabbanea, you've got to have a little bit more. All right, fine.
It's striking to me because it was
conditionally big. Okay. There's got to be a little bit more judgment, I think, this is a long story in the middle of the dump. But thank you very much for the insights about London, at least. That's amazing. And I'm masking to the English. Okay. Anyway, now, what's the basis? I mean, it's really quite amazing to think. Speaking about a pruta, my gosh, to spend £1 on one date. Amazing. So anyway, what is the basis of this? And this is a big machlokas rishonim. There are some rishonim, including the Rush, who learns that this is a gezeira derabbanan. Because what if someone is there from London and he sees someone using a date to be Mekadesh and Isha and they laugh it off and they're mater? And he'll say, what's going on over here? That was a kosher condition. So because of that, since it may end up, he'll go back to London and he'll say, well, I saw a local Abaisa, Rabbi Yashiv said, you use a date, it's not a good condition. Okay, so because of that, we make this gezeira. Now, according to that, it would mean that even though you are Mekadesher with a head of lettuce, let's say, and that head of lettuce is never going to survive to take it to Madai to be able to sell it in Madai, because it'll shrivel by the time it gets to Madai. Doesn't make any difference. That's not the issue. The issue isn't whether it's really translatable into a Shavar Pruta. But the Rambam says Beferish not like that. The Rambam says you can rely on one thing that makes a heck of a lot of sense. That if this is something that there would be no way for you to translate into that value in Madai, I mean, he doesn't use Madai, he says in any other location, so then you don't have to be chayish for it. So as he learns that it's an actual chashash, that since it's currently translatable in value, that if it literally couldn't be worth to you that value, you don't have to worry about it. It's a big nafkamina lahalach about how we look at this. Ask the Gemara. So then how does Shmuel understand the Mishnah? The Mishnah gives a value. Beis Hillel says, Berpruta b'shava pruta. And now what Shmuel is doing is he's basically saying that that's a meaningless statement because you're always going to have to worry about whether something is worth a shava pruta b'madai. So what difference does it make? No, come on, that's not a question. It makes a tremendous difference. Habi kedushe vadai v'habi kedushe safek. I mean, we need to know what the value would be to have a Vadai Kedushin, said if somebody else was Mekadesh, the second Kedushin would be Batal. Masha Enkein, if we're always going to be Mesupik, Shema, so then in that case, she would need a get from both of them. And we had an actual Maisa. There was Ahugav V'Dagdish B'Zavda Du'urde. There was a man who had a suitcase full of rags. He was a rag dealer. To Yosef, and he was Mekadesh, a woman, with his favorite suitcase of rags, which was not worth very much. So they came and they sat there and they looked. Does it have a Shavar Pruta? Does it not have a Shavar Pruta? He is paying Shavar Pruta, so then the Kedushim would be good. But he less the Shavar Pruta low. So the Gemara says, I mean, so what were they looking for? And if it doesn't have a Shavar Pruta, why wouldn't it be good? According to Shmuel, Chashin and Shama Shavar Pruta b'madai. Yeah, that's true. But over there, the question was it a Kedushe Vadai to be Mavato, the Kedushin of another person who had given her an actual pruta afterwards? That was the question. So in terms of Shmuel, it would be Kedushe Safik, and we would still require a get. So it's still obviously Negea. Well, there was another Maisa. There was a guy who had this blue, very cheap, cheap stone. That was blue, and, you know, so it was a little decorative. As Rashi says, it was a little piece of marble with a dark blue color. So he gave her this stone, and another guy came along. The Tosafot says we're talking about over here. Well, we'll see in the next case. I'll explain. So Rav Chista was sitting there. I was trying to figure out, was that stone a Shavar Pruta, because another guy had given her a Pruta afterwards. So he wanted to see whether it was worth a Shavar Pruta or not. He's been Shavar Pruta. Says the Gemara, isn't that the same problem? Yiles be Shavar Pruta lo? But I thought Shmuel says we always have to worry. Now, the Gemara should say at this point that we needed to know the difference between the Vada and the Safek, right? The same answer that we gave a minute ago. Why we bring this up again? So Tosafot says that the case here is a case where the second one who gave the Shavar Pruta, who gave an actual Pruta, he was the brother of the guy who had given the blue stone. So now we've got an impossible situation because we can't say that we would just need to see whether we would need a get, because in that case she would be Asura to both of them because she would be Grushas Achiv. So because of that, he actually was going to define this as worth a Shavar Pruta. So why didn't he think that he would anyway need to worry? Well, obviously he doesn't hold of Shmuel. Rav Chista lo savor le de Shmuel, because otherwise there would be nothing that he could do to be matirat. Anyway, in this story, the mother of the brothers, because Rav Chista said it wasn't worth a Pruta, and therefore, the first brother, his kedushin was nothing. So the mother came over and said to Rav Chista, I'm telling you that on that day, what do you think my son was such a cheapskate? On that day that he was Mekadesh with that pruta, it was definite, with that stone, it was definitely worth a shofar pruta. Since then, you know, they've brought this stuff in from India, and now it's very cheap. But on that day, it was still definitely worth a shofar pruta. So Rav Chisda said to her, look, you are not, as an aide, you're not able, as a single aide, as a mother, lavko kaminach de'asart la'abatra, you cannot be believed in order to asser her, because what I see in terms of my research is something that's not worth a shofar pruta. So how can you come along and asser her on the other man? And I'll prove to you that I'm right in saying this. This is the same case as that famous maisa of Yehudis, who was Reb Chiya's wife. Now we know that Reb Chiya, he had always twins. A disaster, right? So he had twin boys. We always talk about B'nai Reb Chiya. And he had twin girls. And his wife was named Yehudis. And she was going nuts with having twins all the time. So she tells him, you know, I remember this story that my mommy told me that while you, little Yehudis, were small, your daddy was Mekabel Kedushin from a guy, and I forgot all about this to tell you this. So this way, she figures, her husband is not going to be able to have any more kids with her. Whew, that's the end of this kid. She blamed him, I guess. Okay. In any event, so Reb Chiya said, nice try, honey bunch. But lavko kamina, the imach, the asat lechaluye. Your mother cannot make you asura to me. It could be it was a plot by the mother too, who knows, right? But your mother cannot be believed. So it's exactly the same case. You're coming as mommy, and you're coming to say what how much it was worth on that. You have no name on us. And we see that halacha l'maaseh, we weren't worried about that kind of thing. Now, why are you so certain that just because the blue stone wasn't worth it? I mean, maybe we should be chayshish for the fact that there are people that claim that there were witnesses who actually knew the value and they were there, and now they've moved. They left, they went back home to Idis, and they know that on that day it was worth a shofar pruta. Now, as Tosis points out, it's obvious that we don't know this for a fact. If we did, then we would be chayshish, but there are rumors to this effect. Said Reb Chisda, look, it doesn't bother me. You're on the basis of rumors that there are witnesses, so I should be chayish that we need to work. Do you see any witnesses? What are you going to tell me? There are witnesses on the North Pole. You know, istan is the north wind. There's witnesses at the North Pole, you know. So we should actually send a whole expedition with Winnie the Pooh at the head and try to find these witnesses. Absurd. So we don't worry about that. So you see that Reb Chanina said we don't worry about that. And the idea would be, therefore, that it's the same question that is here. So I don't worry about the fact that you say there's rumors. Because of that, the Kedushin of the second brother was the kosher Kedushin. Abaye Varava do not agree with this psak. And they said that you have to worry that Reb Chanina, you're telling me we don't worry about Rabbi Chanina. The case of Rabbi Chanina was a case of a shvuya. And that is a completely different situation. Because the case over there was a beautiful case that we learned together in Ksuvitz. The case over there was, if you recall, that Shmuel's daughters were kidnapped by Goyim. And that was a disaster because, like this, we would be passing them from Kohanim. So what they did was, they actually were so smart, they knew the halacha of a pesha asra, pesha iter. So when these Goyim brought them for getting money to sell in Eretz Yisrael, they figured the Jews in Eretz Yisrael will pay for these poor women that we captured. So they told the Goyim, you guys hide outside of the Beis HaMidrash, okay? We're going to go into the Beis HaMidrash. So these two daughters go into the Beis HaMidrash, and they each one says, I was captured, but I wasn't raped, and she was captured, she wasn't raped, and each one came separately to say that Pesha Asra, Pesha Yeter, I was captured, but I wasn't raped. So they paskin, okay, so in that case, Pesha Asra, Pesha Yeter, you're allowed to be married to a Kohen. And then they were ransomed. Fine. So what happened over there was that there were supposedly rumors that there were Edim that had been there, and they would have been able to tell us that they were captured. So why is it a Pesha Asra, Pesha Yeter? So Reb Chanina said, if there's Edim at the North Pole, we're going to worry about it. So there, Reb Chisda was trying to bring a raya that that's the same as the blue stone story. And Abaye of Rava said, it's not the same at all. Because im hekilu b'shvuya, just because they were mekel in a case of a shvuya, that's because, now there's a girsa, not everyone has this girsa, d'menav l'nav shegabi shavoy, a shvuya is going to do her best not to be raped. So she will always make herself appear as disgusting as possible to her shvuya. Should we be making in the case of an Ashes Ish, which is what you want to do? And maybe she was married to the first guy. So Tosfos says that this part is not necessarily the correct girsa, because you could say that im hekalnu b'shvuya, what would be the din? Even if these Edim existed, what would be the din? That she's Aser Midiraisa? No, she still wouldn't be Aser Midiraisa, because we don't know that she was Nitmes, and she had a chazaka that she was kosher. So this was all a din in the Rabbanan that we have to assume Midirabbanan. Masha'in came in this case, if we knew for a fact that it was worth the Shavar Pruta, she would be Asura Midiraisa as an Eishes Ish. That's the point. You don't have to come on to this business of she would have made herself ugly. That's a very simple difference between the two cases. Or Tosfos says you can say something else. If we're mekel on a shvuya, so what would be the iser if she was raped? There would be an iser zayna to a husband who's a kohen. So we should be mekel by eshes ish, which is an iser misa? We wouldn't be if he was a kohen. Okay, anyway, that's the question of how exactly we should read it here. But certainly the two cases, Taina, Rava, and Abaye, are in no way the same. And the fact that we're not chayish for these edim doesn't mean anything when it comes to this case of the blue stone. And because of that, what happened was that in real life, this woman remained the wife of the second brother, which would mean that according to those who disagreed with his psak, that there would be sefek mamzerim if it was grushas achiv. So ishtayra mi'ayim ishpacha b'sura, there were members of this family that lived in Sura, and the Rabbanan would never make shiduchim with that family. Porshu Rabbanan mine, because of the chashash of mamzeros, and they didn't agree with Rav Chisda's heter. But the reason for that was lav mishum desviru deshmuel. The reason was not because they were perished from the family because they were chayish for Shmuel, that shema shava pruta b'madai. No, that wasn't the point, shema shava pruta b'madai. The point was that they held of Abaye of a Rava, that there were the rumors of the Aden. That's why they were Purish. So some, it's very interesting. So some learn this in mamish totally opposite ways. Some learn this to mean, don't think that if they would have been Cheshish for Shmuel, that then they would have been Purish. No, because Shmuel, as far as like the Rosh, that it's really only a Gezerah Rabbanan, that maybe someone from Madai would have been there. They certainly wouldn't have been so machmer to be perished from the mishpachas based on that. So it's because they were chayish for edus. Mashen came, others are medayik exactly the opposite. That the Gemara needed to talk out that the reason for this, halacha l'maisa, was not because they held of Shmuel. Mashba, but if they did hold of Shmuel, that they would have been chayish. That's like the Rambam, that it actually is a chashash of real kedushin. So you can go either way. Very interesting, right? Okay, the Gemara learns like the first approach. There was another maisa like this that is part of the discussion of Shmuel, in that there was a guy who was magdish, makadish a woman with a shutita da asa, and he did this in public. So he took a beautiful piece of hadassim that he picked off of a tree, of a bush, and he gave it to this woman to be makadisha. So Rav Acha bar Huna sent Rav Yosef a shaila, kahai gavna mai, is this kosher kedushin or not? Now this is fascinating because remember, according to Rav Yosef, you need to actually have the kitz, so it would have needed to be evaluated, right? So, I mean, the question is, why is Rav Yosef, he's the one that should say, well, for sure it's not a problem. Okay, so apparently Rav Yosef was chayish here. Even so, apparently for Shmuel, despite the fact that it runs against his personal shita. So what did he say to do? First of all, beat the guy up. Because if you make kedushin in the open marketplace, that's considered to be a pritzus. And Rav used to give malchus to people who would be mekadesh a woman in the open. But you also need to be machmir and demand a get. If she ever wants to get married to someone else, you demand a get, because Shmuel says you have to be chayish. And I'll explain it to you. Rav, man gid al demekadesh b'shuka, there were a lot of things that Rav was very makbid on, and he would have the guy beaten up. So first of all, if he was mekadesh openly in a public place, and if he was mekadesh l'chatchila bevia, which is considered to be a pritzut, and if he was mekadesh without previously discussing the shiduchim, and if he was mevatel gita. So Tosus learns mevatel gita means, according to the sugya that we said before, that if you were mevatel to get it would be batel, and therefore it could cause mamzeres. Rashi learns that it's talking about maybe the shliach will give the get anyway, which Tosus tainas that doesn't make any sense. Otu barashi haskinan. Fine. Again, the important point is, what we're talking about over here is the Rabban get out of Mekadesh Beshurka. And he was also, he would give malchus to a husband who was being forced to write a get. And he goes and he gives a modah before he writes the get. Don't believe a word of what that Besdin says, that get that they gave me. I don't want to give that get. And it's batel mevatel. So if somebody did that, he would give him malchus for doing that. And he would also give malchus for somebody who acted inappropriately with a summons. So that if a bezdin would send a shliach with a summons to the court, and this guy hit him or insulted him, he would give him malchus on the mitzvah shluch of the rabbana. And a person who did not respond to a cheirim, in 30 days he didn't act to get the cheirim removed, it's a tremendous chutzpah, he held him in contempt of court, and he gave him malchus. And a chatna de dairi bechamua, a chatan who would live in the house of his in-laws. Whew. Okay, so now that's an interesting thing, that last thing, Stam, because it's a little confusing since many people do move in with their in-laws. So how in the world do we allow people to move in with their in-laws? There's a lot of discussion about this halacha lemaisa. And as Tosis points out over here, that nowadays, it's very clear that people move in with their in-laws for the monetary value and not for the sex. So basically, the idea of the chashash was that Rav, based on the Gemara that says that a mother-in-law usually gets really turned on by her first son-in-law and they can end up sleeping together. So we don't want, I actually know of cases like this. And therefore, we have to be careful not to allow them in the same home. So that's one possibility. So nowadays, we're not chashish for that. Another possibility, and Rambam paskins this, is that that doesn't apply in the cases of the Ravid, where a special room was set aside for them to stay in that room. So then we're not chayish for the sexual pritzas. And therefore, we sure we assume that it's just for the value of it. And there's other terutzim, but in any event, nowadays, the minhag is that, yes, chatanim are dairi bechamua. There's even some who learn that Rav was mangid al chatana, meaning before marriage, only after giving kedushin, so there was erusin, and that's considered to be pritzus. But that once they're married together, then there would be no chashash. Ask the Gemara, wait a minute. He only would do that if they lived in the house of the father-in-law, which, by the way, the Rambam learns means literally, in the house of the father-in-law. And it's not because of the chashash on the mother-in-law, even if there is no mother-in-law. Because it says over here, the house of the father-in-law. The Rambam takes that as meaning exactly what it says. So he considers it to be an inyan of pritzus because of the same idea that there's a halakha that you're not supposed to go to the mikveh together with your father-in-law, because that's pritzus. In other words, any thought of the genital connection that, you know, well, this is the source of my wife and so on, that whole thing is very inappropriate. Same way a child is not supposed to go with a parent into a mikveh. So because of that, it's just an extension of that halacha. It has nothing to do with the presence of the mother-in-law. So, but anyway, it said over there that there was a chatan that was cholif above the vecham. He just walked by the house, and Reb Sheshes gave him malchus. So why was Rav only makbid when he was actually living in the house? No. That was a crazy case. That was a case where the whole town was talking about the secret relationship that he had with his mother-in-law. And everybody was talking about that. That, he felt, was inappropriate that he should get anywhere near that house. So, midam havidai mechamate mine. There they were talking about that relationship. Nardoi amre? Whereas the Nardoi say it's not true. Rav was not mangid, except on the case of someone who was makadesh bebia, and it was also bebia without shidduch. And that's really, that's crazy. You bump into a girl and say, okay, how about I sleep with you? You be my wife out of the blue. I mean, that is already a real princess. Some say that he was also, even if there were shidduchim, he held it was princess. Okay. Some use that heter that we go according to the Nardoi to explain why we would be matir nowadays living in the house. But as others, Taina doesn't say they said it was mutter. They just said that Rav wasn't manget. Okay, Ahu gaver the Kodesh Betzifta de Asa. There was a guy who gives this woman a mat. And the mat was made with these beautiful hadasim, and she takes it from him, and she says, people say, there's no shavar pruta in this mat, so how can you use it for kiddushin? Ha, he said to her, but you don't know that I got a diamond ring hidden in that mat. So when she opens that mat, she'll see how much she's really worth to me. Tikdush be arba'a zuzei de'idba. Okay, so shekalta. She kept it after he said that, and she didn't say anything. Omar Rava havishtikuta shela acher matan mos, and kol shtikuta shela acher matan mos, lav klumu. Just being quiet after something was given to you does not indicate that you were mekabelet as kiddush. Because the woman understands, well, when he gave that to me, I thought he was a weirdo. You know, I certainly had no intention of being his wife for a throwaway mat made out of hadassah. You know, he wants to give me a gift of something, you know, okay, I'm not indicating that I want to be married to him. So she would actually have to say, okay, fine, so then I'll take that money. But just being quiet, and just because now she realizes there was a diamond ring, that doesn't mean that the original Kedusha was Kedushin, and she's not saying that she's ready to be Mukadeshet. Now, remember that by a get, we'd never have this discussion, because it would be the same as saying, Tli gitech mi'agabi karaka, right? As you're saying, open it up and you'll find the diamond ring. I mean, but then you never gave her that diamond ring in her hand as a diamond ring. But that doesn't matter by Kedushin. Because by Kedushin, the only thing that's necessary is that she actually get that value. There's no din of a natan biyada that we learn out from the din of Gittin. Instead, we learn out from the halacha of Mecher. Okay. Tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, which we have to discuss when that is, but tomorrow we will continue the ride. This goes on all a long way onto the next stuff, and I think it's kedai, therefore, to examine Rava's raya, that shtikusa la'achar matamos lav klumi, and I wonder whether this is worth a gavi note, because it is a klal. It's just very rare that we meet this klal, but heck, if we're dealing with all of the klalim, lo yomru shegavi chaser klum. So probably it's Kedai. Okay, everybody, it's time for the man of the hour.
Name was Myrtle, by the way.
What's that? The woman's name was
Myrtle.
Of course, of course. All right, man of the hour, Ish E.T., speak up. Or forever hold your peace.
I've heard that before somewhere. 7:50, 10 minutes to 8.
10 minutes to 8. Well, we could do 8:45. Or do you still prefer a later? What's that? What's happening in Joburg? Where are things at?
It's like 7:30 your time, but it's
different. Even 7:30 would still be good for you, our time. Wow. Okay, we still got a big difference there. Boy, this is even with the new adjusted tilt of the Earth of an additional 31.5 inches that you've heard about, I'm sure. You know, this is what happens with all of this overeating in America. Okay, so what do you think, guys? Ah, the rare claw is that shtikusa lebosar matan mos, lachar matan mos, lav klumi. Okay, that's what we ended with that, sir. Rabbeisai, so shall we still maintain a minimum of an hour, or is it okay, you feel we should? That we should still wait another week before going to 8:45, do 9. Okay, I'm certainly nechev. Is this okay with everybody for us to do 9? Richie's got a very big smile on his face. Okay, he's planning on
8:50. Rebbe.
Huh?
8:50.
So that's what I just asked, and people are saying they wanted an
8:50, not 9.
Oh, I thought you meant to. I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. Okay, I mean it's. What's he saying? What's he saying? You're not. You have got no sound.
Am I new to 9? Better than
9. That's what I thought people were saying. So I thought we should just, you know, sort of keep it to the 1/4 hour mark. Okay, so Bezrat Hashem, we'll see you Mitzvah Shabbos with the good Lord's help. We should be zeichet to meet at 9 o'clock and celebrate Hinei El Yeshu Hasi. Meanwhile, wishing you a wonderful Shabbat Shalom u'mevorach with many Besuras Tevas and with an end to all of the Tzoras of Yisrael. Kol Tov, everybody. Wonderful to see you.